It is what it is for now.
For now.
It is going to change because you felt the wrath of it. Women have an agenda. They want to be represented. We definitely need balance. It just needs to happen.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Sharon Keegan, the founder of Peachy Lean. You might remember Sharon as having been on the podcast before. So today we find out exactly what she's been up to since we spoke last. And then we do something a little bit special. In the second half of the podcast, we have a very open and honest conversation about the challenges faced by female entrepreneurs in the world today and exactly what we can do to make it better, the impact we can have and the changes we can make so that my daughter and future female entrepreneurs have a better world in which to become entrepreneurs. I hope you enjoy this conversation. It's a little bit different, so do let me know. Do get in touch. Let me know what you think and let me know suggestions for similar pods in the future. This is my chat with Sharon Keegan, founder of Peachy Lean. I'm building much more than a podcast with the Entrepreneur Experiment and have a very clear vision of what I'm trying to achieve. One of those goals was to get involved in funding Irish businesses, and I've just achieved that goal. I've joined the Quintus Capital team as a special advisor to the EIIS Innovation Fund. I spent the last couple of years getting to know the team, learning about the industry, and the time has come to join forces. The EIIS Innovation Fund has invested in several of the podcast guests you know and love already, such as Matthew and Katie from Squid and Peggy and Crowley of Brown Wellbeing, which has made the decision to join the fund a really, really simple one. EIIS Tax Relief provides significant tax refunds to investors who back Irish SMEs. However, the main issue with EIS is finding the right companies to invest in. This is where the EIS Innovation Fund comes in. It is an experienced management team to allocate your capital. They're now raising capital for November and December to deploy in 2024. If you are interested in becoming an investor, please visit EIIS.fund, so EIIS.fund, or download a copy of the online brochure in the show notes. Ever find yourself jumping from task to task? Sudden eureka moments at the weirdest hours, and you forget little details? Does that sound familiar? That might be ADHD, and ADHD Now are here to help. Their experienced clinical professionals conduct video consultations at your schedule and help you manage and understand these symptoms, turning them into your unique assets. Visit adhdnow.ie/fox and use the code FOX10 at checkout for 10% discount on your initial consultation and full assessment. I've got a massive ambition for this podcast. I want to make this the number one business podcast in the world. If I'm going to do that, I've got to be world-class on every single level. And that includes having a world-class studio, which I now have at iconic offices, The Green Room. It's an incredible space. I first recorded here with my live pod back in June, and I loved it. And get this, it's publicly bookable. That means you can go online and book it right now. As I said, it's called The Green Room. It's a private cinema and screening room. That means it's perfect to wow a client with a pitch, host a private screening, or do what I do, record a podcast here. So, as I record here, and as you know, I'm a member of Iconic Offices, I've got the team at Iconic Offices to hook us up with a number of exclusive complimentary office trials and discounts for my audience for booking this exact space. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description, grab the offer that works best for you. Thanks, Iconic Offices. Sharon, welcome back to the pod.
Thank you. Oh my God. We're a person this time.
I'm excited to say that. And do you know what's beautiful about the pod now? It's been going so long that people are coming back and we're part of each other's stories now. And there's a beautiful synchronicity to that. It's kind of coming full circle where we kind of like check in now. The last time we did this was during that period we won't talk about.
The traumatic.
You were sitting in your bedroom. I was sitting in my bedroom.
Yeah.
We were Zooming. Didn't know each other. And since then we've got to become good friends.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant to have you back on. Give a quick overview. If there's about two people in Ireland that haven't heard of you, give me a quick overview of what you do.
Do you know, it's funny, like if you think everyone knows you and then you go into a networking room and like people don't know who you are, especially like a cohort of people, they're just like, what?
Fruit and veg, is it?
Yeah, what is it? So my name is Sharon Keegan. I'm the founder of a company called peachylean.com. We're an online fitnesswear brand. We really design... Well, I suppose my tagline would be that I sell confidence, or we sell confidence in the form of spandex and nylon. And really what that is we design products for women that gives them an extra sense of confidence and support. And it really started with, you know, started with activewear. and particularly leggings that just absolutely, they just love these leggings. We branched out into other lines of clothing. And then, you know, the future looking really bright for us because we've designed so many really supportive products for women that our community have helped us build. So it's just very exciting.
People talk about that all the time. Our community, it's so over leveraged. But then when you do have a brand like yours that actually builds a community, there's something powerful there. How did you build that?
You're right. People over leverage the word community, but community to us is everything. Like it's, you know, we work out with these women. We go out at nights out with these women. We speak to these women. We champion these women. They are our friends now.
I love your social because it's real.
Yeah,
I like
it's real.
What,
yeah,
because very few companies you look at and you're like, oh yeah, look at the story. Usually you're like, skip. Whereas yours, they're actually real.
Yeah, they're real.
And it sounds cliche. They're real people. Of course, they're real people. Yeah. But it's just you doing your thing with your community.
Yeah, it's connecting in with them. Like, you know, look, a product is a product. You know, it sits on a shelf or it's, you know, it's designed for a reason. But we're genuinely trying to help women with their confidence. And leaning into that, you know, it takes a certain type of team to kind of, I suppose, authenticate that. And that's a really big word to use. But like, we're trying to authentically lean into our community and help our community, because I think businesses that really, really try and help and solve a real problem and actually try and serve their customer are businesses that have longevity. We're not just there to sell a product and create cash. Of course, every business wants to do that, but we want to build relationships so that when we do build these products, they're a part of the ideation stage, but two, they're bought in for life. So that's really what we're trying to do.
What do you think of companies like Patagonia? As you were explaining that to me there, I'm like, Patagonia, yeah. It just popped in my head straight away because it's authentic. It's a real story. And we all know, you know, most of us know his story now. And you're like, what an amazing story, because there's so much business has become like fast fashion. People think it's just, I'll just become an entrepreneur. I'll just spin up this startup. And we both know that's just not how it goes. And I think there's a real differentiator of people like yourself who are building something to endure.
Yes.
You're building something that's not just a pair of leggings.
Yeah.
You're building something so much bigger. But how did you land that? Because sitting here now, it all makes perfect sense. But how did you land on that? How did you come up with that kernel of an idea?
So I had run a business previous to Peachy Lean, and it was a food business. And I was running that business for, I'd say, about 8 years. And it failed, right? It didn't fail because of the product was unviable. It was basically we were importing the product from the UK. Sterling rose to an all-time high. The margin overnight was so little margins anyway, big multiples. You had to sell in huge volumes. And within a week, we had to kind of pull back the business. I was actually running it for a UK company. And in that time, I was 33 and I was pregnant. And I had so much of my life, an ego, I'm going to call it my ego, was built into being a busy businesswoman, a manager, someone who was always busy, always something on the go, finger in many pies. It was a pie company, but you know, like literally fingers in many pies, quite literally. So when it failed, I felt one, a sense of massive, massive loss, responsibility and failure. And I felt like the death of my ego for sure, because I got my first sense of failure. Okay. And looking back at that was probably the best thing that ever happened, because you have to really look at the inner game, your inner self. Who am I? What do I want to do? You know, when I'm at my lowest, how do I deal with picking myself back up, the resilience that everyone needs to be a good entrepreneur? And I had my first son and I was at home with him and I wasn't feeling very well, but I just thought it was because the business had failed. I just thought, I'm just not feeling very well. I'm low. But I actually then was diagnosed with postnatal depression. And in that period of time, because I was reflecting inward at myself, I was kind of looking at other women who would have experienced, you know, self-confidence issues, you know, not feeling great about themselves, having children and then just kind of losing themselves actually in that time of their life, because it happens to so many women and men, but mostly women. They find a sense of grief and loss when they have their children, because you go into this midlife stage where you're thinking like, is this it? Is this it? for me. So PG Lean was born to try and fix that, actually. And I had thought about this community, and we build a community like a Weight Watchers community where we all sit together and we come up with kind of, I don't know, nights out, or just kind of build like a network. And I remember being in the gym, because I was in the gym, which made me feel so much better at the time. And I remember thinking, well, if we could build a product to get people in to the community and get them moving, because movement for me was my medicine and it was making me feel better. I thought, well, if we can do that, we can build something around that. And that's where it literally was born. It was born on a piece of paper, a pair of really uncomfortable Spanx underwear, which, for anyone who doesn't know what Spanx are, they are a nylon product that women wear underneath their dress or, you know, clothing to make them look slimmer. And at the time I wanted to look slimmer, but I was wearing them on the treadmill and I thought, there has to be a better way of looking slimmer than these Spanx. So it was born on that idea, and then the community was built around that, because once you can lean into a problem, an emotional problem for somebody, it doesn't matter how much that product costs, they're in and they're invested for life. So yeah.
But you weren't just building a product, and you were solving your own problem. I think that's like, it's happens so often, like, you know, entrepreneurs like, I'm doing it for myself, I don't care. And that's where the best businesses come from.
Yeah.
It's always the people that are like, they find a solution, then go find a problem.
Yeah.
You're like, that's not going to work. Like, you're just, you think you have this great idea, but it's always the people who are like, even if it's just for me.
Yeah.
Even if it's just for me and five of my best friends.
Yeah. And usually, like, if it's for you and you see it as a big enough problem, you're going to find people in your tribe, or they are your, you know, like, tribe of people, your niche of people that you, that are going to have the same problem, right?
When did you start this?
So the concept really was started in 2018. And then we kind of went out to market in 2019. Mm. So we really started selling. I'm saying we, like me and the baby at the start, but like, we are a we now. We're a great, team now. But yeah, starting off, it was just me and Liam, you know, on my hip, going around to gyms and asking women, would they be interested in this product? I had one sample, really. But we were able to sell, you know, I think it was 240 or something units to validate the product. I didn't have any units. Like, I had no product. And then, you know, we got a chance to go on the Dragon's Den, which, you know, for anyone who doesn't know that, we went on to the BBC One Dragon's Den in April of 21. And it was filmed in 2020. And it was filmed in COVID times. So everybody knows, a very, very difficult period. And we had our own difficulties, challenges at that time. And then, yeah, exploded in 2021, like, exploded. But again, we were coming out of COVID times. Activewear was mad. Like, everyone was sitting at home in their peachy leans, you know, at the office desk. Like, and it was just a good time. It was a good time.
But isn't it funny though, preparation, you know, it's like, you get lucky. The more preparation I do, the luckier I get. The more work I do, the luckier I get.
Yeah.
You know, if you hadn't started in 2019 and you started in 2021, because I've seen that happen. I've seen a lot of activewear brands start.
Yes.
Oh my God, e-commerce, it's all the future.
Yeah.
But they didn't have what you had. They didn't have that story, and they didn't have that authenticity, and they weren't really solving something. They just saw, we'll just sell activewear online because e-commerce is thriving, right?
Yeah.
I know some people have probably listened to your first episodes. We are kind of bringing it up to date. Since we spoke, which was 2021?
I think it was 2021. I don't even know what year we're in now. 23, yes. So yeah. 2 years ago,
so
yeah.
2 years. What's been happening in those 2 years? Because it's been a transformative. At the time we were talking, things were just zipping up for you. So what's been happening? Because I'm personally, from an anecdote of one, I'm seeing it everywhere. I'm seeing, and I love when I get a buzz and I see people walking by with a hat. I'm like, yeah, what do you mean? And I think people are like, what's that man staring at?
There is nothing more satisfying when you see someone walking down the street. Like, I'd nearly run after them and say, hi.
I saw this a lady walking down the street, and she was probably in her 80s, and she had the Peachy Lean hat on. And I was on the phone to Michelle, and Michelle was like, what's going on? I was like, there's a lady walking by with a Peachy Lean hat on. It's class. But I love that. Must be such a gratification. So bring us up to speed, say 2021 to 2023. It's very easy to say that, but hard to do. What's been happening?
So we went out to raise cash. in 20, so 21, we kind of rode the wave of the Dragon's Den kind of madness. And it was like a tsunami of madness, if I'm truly honest.
And what happens after that? Because I've chatted a few people and they're like, it's mental.
Yeah, it is. And look, if you get it right with the PR kind of a machine and, you know, you really drive into that and you do your top funnel kind of, you're out and about, you know, I'm obviously the promoter of the business and I was everywhere. People were sick of the sight of my face, I'd say, in 2021. It was a mad time. And like, people talk all the time about scaling too quickly. That can happen with the business. I'm not saying it did happen to us, but what happened is it sucks all of your resources in, if you know what I mean. So we had a small team. We underestimated, one, the volume of sales, two, the stock levels, and three, the customer service, the amount of people coming at you asking questions, which we were underserving the customer in.
This is interesting because this is, I think, an insight people won't get because people are like, oh, boo-hoo, I've too many sales.
No,
but what happens? Yeah. What's the ripple effect?
Well, what happens is, like, especially in that period, I think we were 6 weeks in a customer service hole, if I'm truly honest, trying to answer people and size. Like, your customer service is your sales funnel as well, you know? Your customer service people are the people that are converting your sales. You know, they're the ones, you know, speaking to the consumer at the end of the email or on the phone or whatever, advising on sizing or returns or whatever that is, or, you know, if they want to return something, we'll upsell them or whatever that is, you know. So that was so important and it was a huge lesson for us that we need great customer service people because every one of us were sucked in at that period.
Right.
And it was beyond hell. It was really, really a tough period.
So you were just getting bombarded with questions feedback. And
like, what salesperson or entrepreneur wants to go to bed at night having not served people who want to buy your product?
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And the longer it's left, the more angry people get,
and
or
they
stale, criticize you.
Yeah,
like, oh my God, like, what kind of company are you? You know, we were a small little company, like, turning over, you know, a certain amount of six-figure revenues, and then we just shot into this stratosphere of seven-figure. Like, it was just madness, absolute utter madness. But I'm so grateful for the time as well. We kind of launched then in the UK, if you know what I mean. We weren't prepared for that. It was Brexit period. Mm. You know, we were, you know, the UK is such an established market in e-commerce. It's very, I would say, spoiled in e-commerce. Next day delivery, sometimes same day delivery. They don't like paying for delivery charges, and we would have to eat that up. And there was just a lot, if you know what I mean. And a different market. So we always look at the UK, obviously Ireland is one market, but we always look at the UK as our sister market or brother market, whatever you want to call it. And I always say the sister, but it's a different customer, you know, and they're not as loyal because, you know, we had the loyalty of the Irish, the Irish business and the Irish story. And, you know, they didn't really care about that. They just wanted the product and they wanted it quickly and they didn't want to pay for, you know, returns and stuff. So that was a huge learning, huge, huge learning and lesson for us that, you know, we can't just launch in a market and not really, we did a few kind of lessons.
We were having a coffee earlier and you were saying, you don't know what you don't know though.
You don't know what you don't know.
And it's really, it is only sometimes by experiencing the pain or the lesson that you're like, okay,
yes,
I know that now. Because on the face of it, there's people listening going, oh God, I'd love to have that problem. Until you do.
Until you do.
Everything's a problem, right? Everything is a good until you have that problem. And you're like, okay, so how did you spin that around then? How did you turn that around?
Yeah, so look, we took on an amazing girl at that time, Chantelle, who's still with us today. She was from JD Sports and she kind of really turned that on its head. We obviously all just jumped in. Carol Mahon, I'll always be thankful for Carol. And she dragged in her sister and her friends and everybody to help at that in that period. And again, like it is, you don't know what you don't know. So, you know, we had to learn really, like throwing someone into the deep end. So that's literally what it was like, throwing you into the deep end. And then as you're in that phase, you take your eye off the ball when it comes to, for instance, forward planning or cash. And that is the biggest lesson to any entrepreneur, which I have learned the hard way, is if you take your eye off the future planning of cash, you will, especially running at the rate we were running at, you can get into trouble very quickly. And that is the truth. And I think coming on podcasts, you hear a lot of people talk very positively all of the time. And that's great. And I'm delighted. I always like clap along for everybody's success because business is hard. But I feel a sense of responsibility as an entrepreneur to always be honest and tell the truth, because we cannot empower others or teach others unless we are honest. And honesty is, you know, that's how we all learn. And you know, we went into 22 then trying to raise cash really quickly off the back of this huge, you know, tsunami of sales. You know, we needed more stock, we needed more staff, you know, and I underestimated the amount of time it would take to raise capital and cash. And like another thing, there's no book on how to raise funds. You know, I was told, oh, there you go. You know, it's a full-time job. You have to go out and raise money. Off you go. And I was like, but what do I do? Like, how do I do that? Like, who do I ask? Like, there's no book. Googling on the internet. Yeah,
where is this money you speak of? Which door do I need to go
so,
to?
So like, you just have to literally cold call and back to your sales days of picking up phones and making cold calls and walking into meetings and networking and introducing yourself and telling your story over and over again until somebody says, yeah, we'll speak to you. And that was a challenge. It was a challenge and it was a long period of time, but we got there, thankfully, you know. But I think another lesson is that, you know, you go out raising cash and you're always raising cash because you're trying to scale to the next point of the journey. And, you know, one of my mentors always said, Sharon, it's like you're at the bottom of Everest. You know, you've built and validated the brand and you've got it to the milestone. You're at the bottom of Everest now. And we're, you know, you're literally a few steps up and every little point, you know, on the journey is that funding scale. So you need a chunk of change for the next part of the journey. And then you'll need a chunk of change for the next until you're self-sufficient and off you go, do you know? So
does it distract you from the main business of being a friend of mine? They raised a colossal amount of money during COVID. And he says, I'm just a full-time fundraiser. He's like, I don't get to be a CEO anymore.
Yeah.
He's like, my entire job is wake up in the morning, raise funds, secure funds, close the round, start the next round.
Yeah. It's very time consuming. And look, we were only at our pre-seed or whatever you call it, pre-seed, seed, whatever. You know, I was doing it part-time because I was engrossed in the business and I was off doing speaking events and networking and trying to really kind of front off the sales funnel. But again, you know, someone pulled me aside and said, Sharon, you really have to do this full time if you want to get this money in. So I had to literally stop that and thankfully had a great team around me to allow me to do that. And then just, you know, full time into meetings and coffees and, you know, really just begging people for money, you know. And it was difficult. I'm not going to lie to you. It was an incredibly difficult period professionally and personally because you're, like, your business is your baby. Okay, yes, I'm in this to change the world. And if you're an entrepreneur who doesn't want to change the world for the better, you shouldn't be an entrepreneur. That's my thinking around it. And I do want to change the world for the better. I want to create an amazing community of women that have self-esteem and confidence and believe in themselves, okay? But if women aren't, I suppose, taken more seriously in when it comes to solving women's problems, then we're going to have a problem forevermore. So, you know, like in the funding game, I felt it quite difficult to try and defend what I was trying to do all the time.
This brings us kind of nicely on to what we said we'd do, not a special episode, but we'd address a lot of things today, but through your story, because I think it's very important to just not take a topic on its own in isolation and go, okay, now we're going to talk about this. Challenges female entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs face in business. What this kind of arose from a conversation we had a couple of months ago about the challenges female entrepreneurs or women entrepreneurs face in business.
Yeah.
So when you talked about there about the challenges you faced during the financing, let's start there.
Yeah.
What challenges did you face during that round?
So I think personally, just first of all, just to be very clear, right? I love men, okay? I love men. My father is the most inspirational person in my life, okay? He's my hero, right? I have two boys that I'm trying to bring up in a world where I'm trying to mother them to an equal balanced thinking. Okay, that's a challenge, right? Mm. At the moment, but we're as a female trying to teach two men. You know, we'll get there, but like, you know, they're two little rugby boys that are real, you know, real little men, and I'm just trying to teach them how to kind of navigate the landscape around trying to have balance, right? My father doesn't know what he doesn't know, because he grew up in a generation where men went to work and women stayed at home. And that's okay, because that's just the way it was. His mother, unfortunately, passed away when he was 4. But my dad would be the perfect example of some of the people that I had to go and meet to ask money for, okay? So he doesn't know what he doesn't know. And there's a balance, like there's an understanding in that for me, because I would have had 2 brothers. You know, I've always been around great, strong men. So I would have spoken the language of men.
Right.
Okay. It is a great quote by an amazing actress. I can't think of her name, but she spoke about the language of men and the language of women. There's certainly a difference between the way men communicate and the way women communicate. Women can communicate very emotionally. We're very authentic. We lead with empathy, and we try to solve problems that are quite personal and empathetic problems. A lot around female health, for instance, okay? Men speak their language, and that's fine. We can speak men language, but when it comes to a female language, it can sometimes feel awkward.
Right.
Okay? And I'm trying to be very diplomatic here, because there is no problem. The problem really is generational, okay? So I would have been going into rooms that there was a very male dominated rooms, very rarely a woman investor in the room, and trying to speak to a man around pelvic health or a jelly belly, or after being pregnant and putting on weight and stuff, it can be a little bit awkward, and that's okay. It's okay. So what I would do is, personally, and I would lead with this for other female entrepreneurs that I speak to about fundraising, I would say always speak to a man like you're speaking to your dad, or else you're speaking to the man like, for instance, you're his daughter, because men have daughters, they have wives, they have sisters, cousins, and women of, so say for instance, the investors' mothers would have had to dealt with a lot of generational bias, but they don't want their daughters to deal with the same things.
This is the thing, right? And it's very interesting you touched on those 2 points straight away. So I spoke to a lot of female entrepreneurs before you came on, because I wanted to really understand and have a deeper knowledge of where we can go deeper with this conversation and find solutions. And that was the first 2 things one person said was, it's societal.
Yes, yeah.
Generational,
yeah. That's okay, yeah.
The second person spoke to Jenny, she said it can often be a case of you spend so long explaining the problem.
Yes.
So long trying to explain the female industry to a male counterpart.
Absolutely. Like when I say Spanx for the gym, I would get like men saying, what the hell are Spanx?
Really?
Yeah, but that's okay. Because like I would have a lot of fun explaining that then, do you know? And I will do that. I'm just saying, not just me, I all the time, but just, you know, I will explain it as their daughter. Do you know your daughter, or do you know your wife wears these, or whatever it is? Mm. And most of the men that had invested in our business actually have their daughters or their wives have worn the product. So they know it that way, if you know what I mean. Mm. So I think it's just around the explanation and getting into the mind and the emotion of, it's not separation of, look, there is absolutely no denying that women entrepreneurs are underserved in the funding side of things. You know, 2% of women globally get VC funding, right? 1 in 50 women get backed in business. But there's 49% of businesses that are started up in 2021, 49% of business startups were female led, and 1 in 50 of them are getting funded. That is a problem. But how do we solve the problem? Okay. So it comes down to female investors. Okay, so having female investors on the board. It comes down to the language we speak. Okay, so really speaking to an audience that are a male audience. And for me, it was ensuring that they understood from their daughter's point of view, their wife's point of view or their mother's point of view. And when you create that emotion, actually, they connect in with the story. And like they always, you know, people always talk about the boys' club or whatever it is. Like, of course, men, if I had a pot of money and it was my children's inheritance, and you know, I'm going to invest in something that I'm interested in. So men really aren't that interested in, you know, breast pump or a pelvic floor issue or a vaginal spray or whatever it is that we are trying to solve problems around. But I think if it's pitched in a way that we're helping the next generation, your daughter, for instance, well, then it can be understood better.
I like that because there's so much nuance, right?
Yeah.
People go crazy online. It's only this way. It's only that way. They want a simple solution to an unbearably complex problem. Yes. So that's why I want to have the chat to kind of like break it down and start going, it's not that straightforward.
No.
There are so many things. And I wanted to hear from you firsthand because, you know, there's no point talking in vague notions of, you know, like stats are great, but nothing beats your story.
Yeah.
Nothing beats someone who's done it and faced across the table. And I chatted to female entrepreneurs about this and they're like, perfect example. I messaged a friend of mine this morning. I was like, chatting to Sharon later, I love some insights from you. She goes, perfect example. I just come out of a meeting with my male co-founder. Person talked to them exclusively.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, this happened 20 minutes ago, Gary.
Yeah, I know.
There's a perfect example for you. They spoke exclusively to him.
But why do you think that is? And like, let's talk about this because this is really important, okay? So I've been in situations like that as well. And we're an all-female-led team, but we would bring one of our male investors in to speak sometimes, you know, depending on the room. And they would speak to the men, right? Why do you think that is? I don't know. I don't want you to be, if you don't want to say personal, but like, I think I have an understanding on why that is.
I think it's what you've talked about already. I think it's humans are wired. People like me. I want to hang out with people like me. I want to do things that I like. I want to, I want to be just like that person there. We're pack animals.
Yeah.
And you take male and female out of it and you go back to biology. We're pack animals.
Yeah. And it's a bit of fear, right? Because they don't know what they don't know.
Don't want to look silly.
And they
don't want to look silly talking about Spanx in front of my male colleagues who'll inevitably, oh, John said Spanx in the meeting. People are very childish as well.
Right? Yeah.
People are uncomfortable. What do people do when they're uncomfortable? They laugh nervously, make a stupid joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there's a lot to it.
Yeah. And as well, like, it's, can I work with this woman, you know, I heard a great entrepreneur. She's an amazing entrepreneur who breaks all the stereotypes. A blonde, you know, pink Barbie doll car who's making mega millions, like nine-figure business, who the men just don't speak to. And they've raised 13 million in funds, right? And she said that a lot, she never gets invited onto the golf course. She never gets invited onto the golf course. And I thought it was so honest of her to say this. And I'm going to share what she said. She said, I don't get invited because there might be problems at home if I do, which is understandable. So, you know, it's understandable, but it's not right.
Yeah.
But it's understandable. So we have to change that. We do have to change that because the more we're invited onto the golf course or invited to the dinners and the more normal that becomes, well, then there's no problems from, you know, jealousy problems or intermarital problems, whatever the problems may be. But, you know, we need to be included at least and be given an opportunity or a chance.
And that's a big part of why I want to do this, because I want to, like, people listening to go, okay, what can I do? Today, tomorrow, in the next month, in the next week, because we've spoken about this. Like, my daughter Willow is 10 months old now. When I think back, or I think forward rather, to the world I want to see her grow up in, if she wants to become an entrepreneur, if she wants to be a business person, if she wants to be whatever she wants to be, what will that look like? Like, but it comes from small change. It comes from individual people treating each other better and making better decisions. So what would you like to see people like you've spoken to before, the investors, other entrepreneurs who are in a position to tell things like, what would you like to see change?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'll speak to my investors because my investors, they got this. I think, you know, because it's generational, we're looking at about 10 years before you're going to see not even a balance, but definitely more women in the investment room. Okay. So for the next 10 years, you know, I'm speaking to now the male investors, maybe, you know, anyone listening today that's investing, to maybe look at the pitches, especially if they're whether they're male or female, look at the business first, the problem, obviously, but not to, if you're listening to the female and haven't a bias for any reason, some sort of reaction to the female, ask yourself number one, why? Mm. And then two, you know, this could be my daughter. This could be my granddaughter. You know, she's trying to create or she's trying to solve a problem for my granddaughter in 20 years or my daughter in 10 years. And if you could look at the actual business in that way, well, then, you know, you probably would feel a little bit better about investing.
Mm. So I talk about this every week in the pod. You have to see it to be it. Mm. And that's a big reason why I do the pod, is that I want people who are like, oh, I'm just like Karen. I'm just like Ben. I'm just like Gary. I can definitely do that. Do you know, breaking down all these, like, you know, you put people on pedestals, mm-hmm. for good or for bad. And we have biases for good, yes. and for bad. It's about understanding, but how do we get more role models like yourself? Is that going to take time, or what can we do to speed that up?
I think everybody, men or women, need to not be afraid to speak their mind. I think too many people nowadays are afraid of being cancelled, and we're going along with the narrative because we're terrified of being criticised. Criticism is fine. It's okay. We have to learn how to deal with that. Okay. We can't live in a world where we enclose ourselves in and just read the comments, and if somebody says something we don't like, we just shut down. That has to stop. We are definitely going to have a mental health pandemic, and it's nearly there already because of people shutting down and not living on an authentic life. Mm. Okay. So I'm from Tala. I speak with a working class accent. I'm not somebody who you would associate with speaking on stage at Trinity College later on, or, you know what I mean? I'm completely different to what you would consider a successful, say, businesswoman even. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes I get that. It's like, God, you're so not what I expected, if you know what I mean.
Really?
Yeah. And I would have had that a lot. There's definitely a bias around.
It's funny how that goes from people's brains to their mouth without someone going,
I've had a lot of that.
Wait, that probably shouldn't go from here to here.
Well, I've had a lot of that. And then I've had a lot of criticism, you know, in general. But look, it hurts. It makes you look inward at the time, but you have to learn how to deal with it. To be a role model, or to be somebody who people look at and say, I'd love to be like that person, or I'd love to live like that, they ultimately look at you because they see something in you that they want themselves. And usually it's about being authentic and honest and living your true life, good and bad. Okay. We see a lot of toxic optimism all over the internet. Okay. LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok. Well, not so much on TikTok. You see a bit of funny silliness on TikTok, but, you know, a lot of it. Okay. That feeds into our confidence, our psyche. And if we don't live up to that, we feel like a failure. And we feel like a failure sitting in our bedrooms or in our kitchens, and we've no one to talk about it to, because we've no comparison. So I would ask anyone who's listening to this podcast, any entrepreneurs, anyone in business, to speak the truth, even in the bad times. Mm. Like, there's more bad times in business than there is good. But everyone sits in this podcast will tell you all about the great stuff, but they won't tell you about the time that they ran out of money and didn't pay their wages, or they had to let their staff go, and how that conversation went, the horrible conversation of knowing they had to go into that room and tell somebody, I'm really sorry, but I have to let you go. We need more of that. Because
that's why I do this podcast, because online, Instagram's a snapshot. LinkedIn's a snapshot. I'm delighted to announce Twitter's a snapshot.
Yeah.
TikTok's a snapshot. I do this. I do it over an hour, because over the hour, you have a proper in-depth conversation and there's nuance.
Yeah.
And that's what really, you know, I did have a period 2 months ago where it really got to me, the criticism really got to me, because I'm like, you just haven't even taken the time to listen to one episode.
I'm very proud of you, Gary.
Thank you.
Yes, I am.
But, you know,
but let's speak about that. Let's speak about it for a second.
Yeah.
Let's speak about it, because I think it's really important, right? We've just spoke about being honest.
Hmm.
Small bit of criticism about female representation on the podcast. Hmm. And you did have female representation on your podcast. I was one of the females, Peggy and Shoopy, you know, I've seen many females, but unfortunately, when that criticism was given, there just wasn't at that period of time.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate, you know, and I would say to people that criticize instantly, that they really should kind of look a little bit deeper into something before they criticize, okay? But let's be honest, it hurts, right?
It does. It really hurts. Did, because I felt, I think you touched on it there, and I think it's really important to kind of reflect on, and just as we're listening to kind of go, oh yeah, maybe, don't react in the moment. Mm-hmm. Understand, have a bit of empathy. Go, I'm just going to check and just listen and see what are they talking about on that podcast. Instead, I had just a flood of people going, yeah, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. One person like hadn't even listened. They were like, is this male only podcast? ? And then that turned another flood, and you're kind of going, you know, I think it's when you try your best. But, you know, I hold my hands up. The representation was not high enough. Not as high as it should have been.
There's a lesson from that. And
there is. And I said, I'll never put myself in that position again whereby I'm able to be pointed at going, he's part of the problem. I said, right, I will never put myself in that position again.
And we were niggling it, and we were all niggling as well. So look, I think sometimes you can thank something that happens in your life, all good and bad, but the bad things teach us huge lessons, okay? Mm. And that was a bit of a bad, like a small negative, you know.
Something positive from it. Exactly. I spoke to you and I spoke to a few other people that I admire and are close to me, and I spoke to them and I was like, right, what will I do here?
Yeah.
Because you know this, you work so hard to build something up.
Yeah. It's your baby.
You do have fear about being cancelled. Honest to God, I do have a fear of like, it can take off in a moment.
Yeah.
And everything you've built can be torn down in one LinkedIn thread.
And I hate that. I hate that we live in a society where we live in this kind of bully mentality, this gang up mentality where people bully each other. It is even like online platforms and forums that they bully people off. Like it's disgusting behaviour. It's disgusting behaviour. But you know, no one really truly knows anybody, if you know what I mean. And I like, you know, look, it's not nice being criticized, but there is always learnings in everything.
Absolutely.
I've hold up my hands and say, you know, there was times where I was criticized and I went into a dark place, you know, for a few days, and I had to play the inner game and ask myself a few questions. But we cannot learn as humans unless, you know, in fairness, we're able to take criticism at times, you know.
And I think it's always very important where it comes from. Yes. When I get feedback and criticism, I'm always having a filter going, where's that coming from? Is that someone I respect and admire? Is that someone who's doing it themselves?
Yeah.
Whereas when I go to for video feedback, I go to Ben, I go to Bren, the editor, for audio feedback. I go to my audience and I go to people like you for feedback on the pod. When it's some randomer sitting behind a keyboard, kind of going, well, you're doing nothing to further the female agenda. So like, why? You know, I think you should look inwards as well and kind of go, if you're going to give criticism, make sure you're in a position to send over it yourself and see what are you doing about it. So yeah, this season, 50-50, as it should be, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad we're able to have this conversation. And I reached out to a number of other friends of mine. I was like, what issues? And one person had a really interesting insight. She's a great entrepreneur. She's so honest. She said, sometimes I have to fight much harder than I feel I should. And it sometimes turns me into a hard bitch, her words, as opposed to who I really want to be.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Like women are asked questions that are very, they're questions of concern and risk averse questions. And men are asked, you know, growth questions. And it's happened in a room. Like I've been in a room and I've been like, just ask me that, you know, but you just have to learn how to deal with it. It is, I hate, this is my late brother who passed on, we always just say, it is what it is. It is what it is for now.
For now.
It is going to change because you felt the wrath of it. Women have an agenda. They want to be represented. We definitely need balance. It just needs to happen. You have a daughter. So for her, it needs to happen. And we should be respected a little bit more. But look, it is what it is. And we just have to learn how to flip the question, you know, or be aware when the question is being asked, you know. Going into a room of male investors, they're going to ask me risk questions.
When you say risk questions, what do you mean?
So a man will be asked a question like, okay, so what, I'd be asked questions about growth, acquisition, exit, you know, how are we going to win? How are we going to win? Tell me how we're going to win. And that creates a sense of encouragement, positivity, and like, oh, I want to play with him, okay? When a woman is asked questions, this has happened many times to me now, so I'm talking personally, but I have also seen it happen at pitches as well. Women are asked questions about, how are we not going to lose customers? how are we going to retain our customers? Retention questions. How are we not going to lose things? Where are you? What's the cost base? How are we going to get the cost down? It's always about...
Why do you think that is? Why is that narrative different?
I'm not sure. And I think it could be around that women are maybe seen as non-risk takers. I'm not sure about what the psyche of the man thinks in that moment. I've never really asked that, if you know what I mean. But I've been able to flip the question on its head. You know, I've been asked questions around retention. How are we not going to lose? How, you know, if this disaster happens, how are you going to deal with that, for instance? You know, I've never been asked the family question, the family like bias question.
But I wanted to kind of bring that up because that was another piece of feedback I got from another entrepreneur friend of mine. She said, you know, there's always this underlying question in the room about...
family, yeah.
Kids. Are you going to have kids?
Kids, yeah.
Are you going to have kids?
Well, I've actually seen a text message. I have seen a text message, which was quite funny, but also in the Irish Times, just on Sunday, not the Irish Times, excuse me, the Sunday Times, the UK one, there was a text message from a VC investor that said, "I'm really sorry, we don't invest in women of childbearing age."
Wow.
Okay, that was a real thing.
That was actually real.
That was it. Like, whoever texts that is in big trouble, but you know, they actually text that. So yeah. And like, that's just such a disappointment, you know. Like, I've friends who were taken on by an amazing company, a US company, who I think you may have on the podcast in the next few weeks, but she'll tell you a story about a really empowering company who employed her when she was pregnant to be a C-level executive, and how she turned that business on its head. Like, we're living in a different world. Like, you're a father now, okay? And I'm telling you, I know this even by sitting here, that you are balanced in your household. I'm sure you cook. I'm sure you put on the washing. I'm sure that you don't, you know, not support your wife if she wants to go off and do something or work or whatever it is. I live in a balanced household. My partner is incredible with my kids. He works full time. I work full time. We share our responsibilities. He cooks the dinner. I don't. I'm absolutely terrible cook, actually, by the way. He's just like, you know, he's amazing.
I won't say on our household. I'll just say I do a lot of the cooking. Yeah. I'm just going to say that much.
And you know what? I actually think it's changed. That is so changed. Every man I meet is the cook in the house.
To be honest, I know we're joking. I know it's a very serious topic, but we can approach it with some levity as well. Yeah. That's very common among my friends, my generation.
Yeah.
Like, the majority, I would think the majority of my male friends would do a lot of the cooking. And it's exactly like that. It's a balance. Like, we don't call them team meetings. We call them family meetings.
Yeah.
Every Monday morning, we have a family meeting.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's a team meeting. We talk about what are you doing this week? What am I doing this week?
What have we got on the schedule?
You're busy, but also, like, it's balance. It's like, okay, when are you going to get your gym in? I'm going to get it in here. When are you going to get it in there? Okay, what else have you got on? Okay, you're doing the Saturday. Cool, I'll do that. But, like, to me, I'm not trying to paint myself as a saint here, but it just seems weird not to have that.
I know. And that's how it's times are changing. So that's what I'm saying. Like, okay, it is what it is now, but it is changing. Mm. Okay. It is changing. And it does need to change. Look, it's about education. As we said, I have out of our cup of coffee, you don't know what you don't know. Mm. Okay. The generation that are now investing in startups came from a generation where women, okay, in the 70s, okay, couldn't buy contraceptives, couldn't say no to having sex with their partner, okay? They couldn't collect their children's allowance. It had to be collected by the man, okay? They couldn't keep their job if they got married, because you were leaving a man out of a job.
Yes,
okay?
Someone said that this morning. I had a call on the way into town and I spoke to a friend of mine and she goes, "Gary, we will be the first generation to go through menopause in the workplace."
Openly, which is perfect, like, yeah.
She goes, because when you think about it, generation before us, just one generation got married, left work.
Yeah. And look, that's that generation. So that is what it is. And that's their mindset. Okay. And they're the ones now sitting in the hot seat. And you know, not all, by the way, because I'm, you know, there's a few young investors and female investors. I'm not tarring everyone with the same brush, but this is kind of where the problem is lying, if you know what I mean. Okay. This is now my perception of the problem.
Exactly.
Okay.
Everything is perception. Everything is just opinion that I have and you have.
And then we came into a generation in the 80s where you had the big female empowerment. I'm a Spice Girl generation. Beyonce, Spice Girls, Whitney Houston, Mary Robinson, you know, like all of these great female kind of, you know, leaders.
Role models, though.
Role models.
Might be business people, but they're role models to go, well, why not?
Absolutely.
Why not?
that would have changed, you know, that would have obviously fed into my psyche as an 8-year-old girl. And now I'm, you know, I'm leading with a female empowerment brand trying to create products for women. Products that, you know, usually were built for men. Like, for instance, did you know footwear, Nike footwear or any footwear, I'm not saying Nike, I'd probably be sued. But anyway, all footwear was always designed on men's feet. And it was shrink it and pink it for women.
Shrink it and pink it for women.
Okay.
Wow.
So women were going around in footwear designed for men's feet. We have totally different feet. Seatbelts in cars were designed only on male bodies. And the percentage of women that die in car crashes is much higher than men because the seatbelt is not designed for a woman's body.
That makes a lot of sense when you say it. Yeah, you never even think of these things.
Okay.
Everyday things you see and use every day, but you don't think back to like probably 15 years ago when they were designed going, what would be the crash like, test dummy would have been a man.
But even sanitary products and, you know, stuff like this, all designed back in the day by a man, okay? And it's great to see now women coming to the forefront looking at these products and seeing the problem that, okay, this is not the solution for a woman's body. And
Irish company Riley,
yeah.
Three female founders backing it in that exact space. Yeah. Perfect example.
Example. And yeah, and, you know, Thea Healthcare and, you know, there's, you know, an amazing female brand that's just come out, an athlete runner who's designing athlete's shoes for women because they're not designed for women, and she was wearing track runners in the Olympics that were designed for men's feet, and her feet were kind of, so it's nice to see that. And it's about thinking, okay, how's the world becoming a better place, and how are we going to save women's lives, create better products, you know, speak to the female cohort of women, you know, like it's just about
One tangible thing at a time.
Yeah.
And that's why I was excited to do this. I was like, I'm so sick of people having a go at each other online in vagueness, nothing real. But it's one tangible change at a time. It's one podcast at a time. It's one product at a time. Yeah. It's one product launch you do at a time.
Yeah.
They're the little things that change, because we talked about it already. It's such a complex problem.
It is. But look, you know, we cannot deny that women, to solve these problems, women need to be funded. Mm. Okay. Because... you have many businesses run by men in my space and otherwise that, you know, they get the big chunks of change and they get the investment and the product is able to scale. And, you know, the businesses should be judged on, yes, the profitability and obviously the scalability, but also not, I don't like quotas, but there should be some sort of, you know, I think in every portfolio or an investment portfolio, certainly on the VC side, there has to be a percentage of female-led companies.
It has to be carrot and stick, doesn't it? Because yeah. I've thought about this a lot, and like, there's no simple solution. It isn't simply a case of, well, it has to be this. You know, but there has to be some level of, are you meeting a performance bar? For myself, I set the imposed bar this season of 50-50. Mm. It has to be a goal, right? Because you don't have a goal, you go, oh, well, next time.
Yeah.
Do you know, there's no...
And I have about 300 women for you now, so I'll give you the list, okay?
You line them up.
I will give you the list. Because I am in that network and there's so many great female entrepreneurs that you need to speak to, for sure. But look, it's been a challenge. I just want to like tell everyone, you know, whoever's listening, you know, business right now is tough for people. Mm-hmm. Consumer businesses are really, really, really finding it a little bit difficult at the moment.
What are you seeing out there?
Well, like, you know, the cost of living is absolutely an issue for everybody. It's affecting everybody, okay? The war is certainly affecting everybody. Like what we're seeing, you know, for your mental health is not good. What's happening in the world at the moment, you know, the cost of living, the interest rates gone up. People are just not. They don't have money.
There's a lot, isn't there?
Yeah, they don't have
money. There's a lot going on. Even when you said it there, there's just so much things happening in the world. It can be a little bit overwhelming.
It can be. And look, you know, I'm a big advocate for mental health. I lost, and since I spoke to you, I've lost 5 people.
My God.
Five. Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's okay. I'm not going to, you know, go into that. But what I want to touch on is that, you know, the war, the images of war, the cost of living, people can't afford to move out of their own homes, COVID, people still working in bedrooms, you know, in their mind 99% of the time and then scrolling and seeing all of this negative stuff, the toxic positivity stuff.
Yeah.
Like, of course that gets into your psyche. Am I good enough? Am I good enough? You know, I'm not good enough. That you, people, and that's where we lose people. And I am such an advocate for telling the truth and being authentic and, like, tell people when you're having a crap day. You don't have to cry on the internet, you know, but you could say, I'm having a bit of a trouble with this, because everybody wants to help, you know, everybody. I've often gone out on LinkedIn and asked for something. People are genuinely good people. They really want to help. And it's
that's
so much.
That's the thing though, right? Yeah. That's, people are inherently good.
Yeah.
There's this fear that, but it's always the 1% that skews it by doing something terrible, whereas inherently people are good.
They are
good. It's interesting. There's a lot of things you said there. I just want to pick up on a couple. I was chatting to a friend of mine. We had a Zoom call on Sunday and his company's gone fully remote.
All right.
I was like, how are you finding it? He goes, really tough, because he's living on his own in a really nice apartment in London, but he's there all day. Then he walks to WeWork. Then he's on Zoom calls all day and then he walks home.
Mm.
And he's like, Gary, I went 3 days.
But I speaking to anyone?
I spoke to loads of people.
All right.
But I never saw anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's all on the screen. Mm. He never spoke to another human in 3D. And I was like, God, that's tough.
It is tough.
I was like, you're looking after yourself, you're able to get out and about. And he's like, yeah, I just feel a bit isolated. Like he's living in one of the densest cities in the world.
Yeah,
but there is an isolation problem. Because you say, you know, it's not, everyone doesn't have the opportunity to like come in somewhere like this to Iconic and work with loads of people. Some people are stuck in their bedrooms. Mm. They are stuck in like a house share with 4 people and they're working, trying to do a proper job upstairs in their bedroom. Like it's not easy. Like there definitely has to be a lot of more empathy given. I think even empathy to yourself as well.
Yeah.
Going, I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Doing all right. There's a lot going on. I'm doing all right. But in terms of from a business point of view, you know, you're seeing costs rising.
Yeah, costs are rising. Consumer spend is down. Retail had a really tough time over the last period, especially over the summertime. Like even the climate, with climate change, because the world is kind of, like you see what happened in July, we had 31 days of rain. And then we had like a mad, really hot September when, you know, retailers are coming into their summer, spring, summer collections. It's raining. And then they come into September where they've got autumn winter collections and the sun is splitting the trees.
There are things you don't think about as a consumer.
You don't. Or as a business, you're like, what? Oh, yeah.
The autumn season. Bring the shorts back.
Difficult period. But yeah, like, you know, it's a tough one. And consumer brands are, you know, well, not saying struggling. They're just getting through, but it's a tougher time. It's not the COVID times where people were just spending money like it was going out of fashion.
Before we do, we'll do a quick fire round in a minute. Like, give me the next 6 to 12 months. What are you looking at? What are you doing? We'll end on some like real positivity for you and Peachy Lean. Like, what are you looking at? What's going to happen?
So we just launched a podcast, myself and Fiona O'Carroll. So Fiona O'Carroll is my mentor.
Powered by the team we have here right in the room.
Yeah, that's Mr. Ben from you. But Fiona was my mentor and I begged her for seriously a long time to record our conversations. That's all it was, because our conversations, like I'm a CEO, but nobody gives you a book on how to be a CEO. I'm a creative, I'm a founder, but like I ain't a CEO, if you know what I mean. Like I'm learning how to be a CEO.
Yeah.
So she was my mentor and she's certainly from the commercial world and she will tell you all of her story, I'm sure. But
we sit down on Friday and I'm looking forward to it.
She's an amazing woman. I love her to bits. But we started a podcast called Shedding Skin and Blisters because we used to record it in the shed and we're like sisters. So it's Shedding Skin and Blisters. And really what it's about is questions from our community. But real questions that I would have asked myself to her. And we go inward, deep. Okay. It's always around confidence, fear, judgment, all of the stuff that we deal with when you're 99% in your head. Okay. So valuable. They're only half an hour conversations. She is phenomenal. Ben will agree with me sitting over there. She's phenomenal and she's helped me. So I could never afford her, if you know what I mean, as a mentor. She was very expensive and rightly so, because she led.
She knows her value.
CEO.
Exactly.
Amazing,
everything
amazing
we're talking
CEO.
About. Yeah.
But I lost my younger brother, Alan, in a period of time where my business was crazy and I needed help because I was emotionally struggling. So she helped me and she's now a director in my company. She helped me for a good 2 years and we're now we now have a podcast. So I want to, that launched actually only last week, and the second episode comes out soon. So like it's going really well.
We'll link that in the show notes as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And you know, it should help people. That's all that we're about, is helping people. We've designed a couple of new products, one of them which launched and sold out in 2 weeks, which we were like really happy about, by the way. It was like, yeah, it was
probably
so
really
amazing.
Happy. And then you're like, oh no, make more.
Yeah, we were like, oh God. But look, it is what it is.
What was the product?
Oh, it's a brand new innovative product, which basically does not slip. It's a product that our customer asked for. Okay. So they helped us design the product. And it was such, you know, and they talk about milestones in your business and happy moments. I have never been happier to get the first review in, you know, and it was like I was actually on edge, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And we got the first review, the second review, the third review, and it was just amazing to get people, you know, telling you that this new product that you created with your community, so I'm giving them credit, was a success. So that was really positive. And look, we've loads of new products coming out. We're out raising, so if anyone of your listeners is interested in having a chat, a great chat, do let us or, you know, contact me.
Yeah, we've a lot of investors that listen, so I'm hopefully you'll get some contacts. Where can they actually, I usually ask this at the end, but I'll ask you right now, where can people reach you quickest?
I'd probably email, but I'm an Instagram girl. But like your listeners won't be Instagram people, but email's fine.
Email, so they get you on LinkedIn as well.
Or LinkedIn. I'm a big LinkedIn woman, yeah.
Right, we will get a quick fire round.
Oh, I love this.
This is my favorite time. Okay.
Okay, go on.
What book should every entrepreneur read?
So entrepreneur book, I would say, well, anything from Gary Vee, but I do have one that I absolutely adore, which is called Who Moved My Cheese. And it was a book that was sent to me. I met Louis Copeland on the street on a day where I was having a really tough day, walking up Grafton Street. And Louis Copeland, dressed in smarts, met me in the street with an investor of mine, Dan Ryan. And I told him what was happening at the time. And he said, I want to give you something. He said, I'm going to send you this thing. So he texted me later on, Who Moved My Cheese? I read the book. We also bought an audio because I'm a terrible reader, but I listened as well. Both I read and listened. Changed my whole perception.
Really?
Yeah.
I've heard about that a lot, but I've never actually read it. And it's the first time it's been recommended.
It's a very simple book. Okay. It's not one of these in-depth entrepreneurial books. And the way you perceive it or understand it is very personal to everybody. But for me, what I was dealing with that period, and I've gone back a few times. No, it's a business book, but I've gone back a few times. It's certainly about mindset and growth mindset, but it's a gorgeous book.
Brilliant.
I recommend.
And I love different recommendations because people always ask me a lot for recommendations because we ask every week. And I'm like, what are you trying to solve or where are you right now?
Yeah.
It's the right book at the right time. It's not about everyone reading the same book. It's about the right book at the right time. And that has incredible power.
Yes.
What is something you didn't pay enough attention to early on and had to learn the hard way?
In life or in business?
Either.
Oh gosh, you're going to make me cry now.
Take it wherever you want.
Oh no, I can't. Oh. I wasn't prepared for that. Time with people. I've lost too many people and we think we have so much time. We don't. Never leave a situation unresolved. Never not tell people how much you love them and appreciate them. And when you get time with people, be present. Be present in that time because you really genuinely, speaking from experience, you don't know if that's the last time. I didn't hug my brother the last day I saw him. So.
Thank you for sharing that. That's very powerful.
Sorry.
Thank you. It's okay. Take a minute. It's fine.
God, I told you I was emotional.
That's okay. Thank you for sharing that.
We're doing a run on Sunday for Al. So.
Brilliant. Where is that on?
In the Phoenix Park. And you know what? Like I was grand for years, but we lost, after Alan, we lost someone who meant a lot to me a year later. And he took his own life. And then we lost another good friend again, who was a first responder, fireman, and he took his own life. And like, it's just such a difficult period to go through, you know, trying to deal with business, trying to deal with young family and grief and an endless supply of grief and bitter disappointment of what could have been.
Exactly.
you know? Yeah,
it's impossible to come to terms with it. You never really come to terms with it. I think it just gets less raw.
Yeah.
And it's 2 years since Pat passed away, and I could only talk about it for the first time 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Properly out loud.
And did you talk about it with your friend that was here?
I've talked about it with James extensively. He's one of the people that kind of got me through it, you know? But it was his first time on a podcast talking about it, because it's hard. It's hard to reveal. You don't know what to say.
Yeah, and it's hard to constantly, like, see, I've got emotional there because you asked me a question genuinely that I wasn't prepared for. Mm. I would have prepared for business now, but life, that's my life question. But, you know, grief doesn't go away. It's a heavy, you know, bag. And sometimes it's light, you know, you can offload, but then you don't want to be offloading. Here I am offloading on a podcast, but you don't want to be offloading on your everyday life with everybody because you feel you're rubbing off on them.
Exactly.
You know what I
mean? And especially when you're a very positive person, we're both very similar. You're a very positive person, but you have to find a way to talk about it.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. That was very powerful.
Sorry, no. I'm always whinging.
I'll change it completely. What would you do today if I gave you 10 million euro?
Oh my God.
One extreme to the other.
Apart from go off and I'm missing. I've never had that, even like the thought of having that much cash. But with the way of the world now, I probably would actually try and help. So if it was 10 million, I didn't have to bring you back. And if it didn't have to double the money.
No, there's no return.
There's no
zero return.
Well, then it would certainly be a human return for me. So I would fund the World Food Organization, UNICEF, certainly something around mental health. I would invest some in property, maybe, certainly property for my family away somewhere nice. And, you know, if I wanted a bit of a return, I would invest in med health, maybe around psychedelics. Which
interesting.
Is
a yes.
really big industry now.
Really interesting space at the minute, yeah.
Huge and massive growth. Like, I think it's in the last 5 years grown from 5 billion to 10 billion or something like that. It was 50% growth or something. But huge interest of mine around mental health and how MDMA actually can help in around huge issues with depression and post-traumatic stress. So something that's just really interesting to me.
I like that. That's an interesting answer. What's something in your daily routine you wish you started sooner?
I'm journaling and also breathing. I know that's said like so cliche, but I can't meditate.
No, I can't either. Yeah.
I'm actually going for a diagnosis of ADHD.
Our new sponsor is ADHD now.
Is it? Oh, I'm glad I mentioned it now. So you need to connect me, right? Because my son is 8 and I'm starting to realize that I think, you know, in looking at his behavior, that we are very similar. And I think he has maybe a touch of, well, definitely, I think he does have ADHD. I don't want to diagnose him without an actual diagnosis.
Isn't it interesting what we can see in others, but not in ourselves?
Absolutely. But when I speak to Sean, he says, oh, you are literally, that is you. So if I do, oh my God, it would give me such a sense of peace because it would make me understand why I do things the way I do, why I can't concentrate, why I always feel a certain, like, I am very confident, but my imposter syndrome is overwhelmingly bad at times. My procrastination, like I tick all the boxes, if you know what I mean. So I just need to figure that out. So journaling and breathing.
I was reading the ad earlier and I was like, to be honest, I think this is me.
Yeah,
I was reading out the
most
things.
Entrepreneurs seemingly have
they
it.
Do.
So.
Yeah, they do have a lot. I know you're going to a panel, so I need to wrap this up now in 2 seconds. If you had to start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
Ooh, obviously digital, something digital, because they always say that. Why did I build a product? I'm a digital entrepreneur. I'm really good at digital. I see the benefits of digital, but digital for positive. Do you know what? I probably would create something around the bullying online situation because I've seen the effects of it to the point of detrimental, tragic instances. So I would love to maybe try and tackle that. That is a problem. And I would love to maybe try and be the solution for something like that.
1000%. What do you believe that other people find strange or strongly disagree with?
That there's a body bias. So, and this is out for argument. So this is a strongly agree or disagree question. But I have had situations where I've seen people judge people on their physique, size, form. And it's always been really interesting to me. In fact, I made a business out of it. You know, Peachy Lean is that business where we don't, we represent all shape and size. But I've seen people judge people based on the fact that they don't look like a six-pack ab person in the gym, where it's just a totally unattainable image. You know, you look at someone who plays rugby or someone who lifts Olympic weights, Olympic weightlifting like I do, and we have totally different shapes of bodies, but we're considered unfit, unwell, overweight, obese in some cases.
Just because you don't fit the stereotype.
We don't fit the stereotype. And that's what PG Lena is about. It's providing imagery and content and confidence for people who don't fit in.
I like it. I got to give two rapid fire answers because you need to get to your panel. Yeah. What's one thing in your personal life that you spend money on that brings you immense happiness?
My kids.
Beautiful. What's your one final piece of advice for every entrepreneur listening?
Oh God, go, like if you're an entrepreneur and you're at home and you're isolated and you're in your own head, get out of your own head. Go speak to people. Reach out. Talk. It's never as bad as you think it is. And everyone that's projecting perfection on the internet, I'm telling you, they all have the same problems. Every single entrepreneur goes through the same problems. We just never tell you about the problems when we're going through the problems, unless you follow me, and then you'll know all about the problems.
Well, I can vouch your Instagram. Ben is a great word. He always says, very wholesome. Your Instagram is very wholesome and very enjoyable and very real. Sharon, thank you so much for coming to join us. Where can people learn more about you and Peachy Lean?
www.peachylean.com. Incredibly active on Instagram at Peachy Lean Official, and anyone can email me at any stage. If you contact this podcast, you can get my email address.
And you're raising investment right now, Sharon.
We are.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that chat with Sharon. Wherever you're listening, whether it's Spotify, Apple, or watching on YouTube, hit subscribe. I'll see you back here in a couple of days. And as I said, do get in touch and let me know what you thought of that episode. And we'll try to do more similar episodes in the future, including a very interesting episode coming up with Choopy in just a couple of weeks. I'll see you then.